Hello, this is the president. Hello, this is the president of the United States. Who is this? Is it you again?
Look behind you.
This is my private line. How did you get through?
They're everywhere. All the time. Receiving every day. But you have to look behind you.
There is nothing behind me. How did you get this number?
The spaceman told me.
What spaceman?
It doesn't matter. They're telling you about the monsters. Please, you must look behind you.
Young lady, there are no monsters in the Oval Office.
And this is Ground Zero. The numbers to call tonight on the program, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. As we edge even closer to Halloween, the shows are going to get darker and scarier. Some far more scary than I want to talk about. Tonight may be one of them. I want to first kick things off a bit. I want to talk about Halloween in general. All right. Now, Halloween's not coming until like the 31st of October. And there have been fights now. People are wondering, should we move it to a weekend? And, you know, and it's just silly to be talking like this. It's just, Halloween is a date set aside. For one reason and one reason only, is it carries over to the All Saints Day in November. Okay. And Halloween has become a potpourri holiday where the meaning is lost from a spiritual perspective. See, for adults, it's another excuse to get drunk. It's another excuse to go to parties where some men ogle at the women that decide that a Halloween costume consists of garter, short skirts, and cleavage. I saw the new Mr. Rogers suit, or whatever it is, for women. Mr. Rogers never looks so good, I'll tell you. But anyway, I'm just saying. Halloween is the naughty nurse, the Playboy bunny, the naughty French maid, all those things. And sometimes, you know, you see a lot of that too when you go to cosplay in comic book, comic cons. You know, you go to that and some guy walks around half naked. Oh, I can get away with it. I'm some character that walks around half naked. The fewer clothes that are worn, that's the costume. And, you know, but I'm no prude, okay? Halloween, I think, should be a time for things bizarre and chilling. I mean, no titillating and crude stuff, just a lot of scary stuff. The only thing is if you dress up as a werewolf at Halloween or you dress up as a vampire, nobody wants to get near you. They don't want to dance with you. They don't want to watch you bleed. They don't want to do it. That's the thing. You got to wear something like a doctor's outfit or something like that. Something to... I don't know. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it. One of my old producers is here tonight, and I'll tell you, he can crack me up no matter what. Anyway, so much of what's accepted today would have been seen as bizarre years ago. We know this. I mean, Ground Zero started out in 1995, and back in the day, I was considered the kook. I was considered the crazy guy, the tinfoil hat-wearing dude. Now I'm pop culture. It's what pop culture is. Everything I talk about is pop culture. So I say, you know, everything that we accept today, it was bizarre years ago. But there are things that have happened in yesteryear and even beyond that time frame that I believe is more bizarre and accepted by the majority of society during the Hallows Eve season. Everything changes around Halloween. Now, if you want to capture the true nature of Halloween, you can go find a costume. Or the best thing I like to do is I like to go to the library. Or I like to dig around to find some old books I can blow the dust off and read all the books about superstition and werewolves and vampires. The books that I was raised on, Man, Myth, and Magic. I don't know if anybody ever read that book, that volume set. I would go to the Salt Lake City Library, because I grew up in Salt Lake, and I would go to the library and I would read the books, Man, Myth, and Magic. And that's how I got my education on the occult. It was something that just fascinated me, the books about vampires and werewolves and all the superstition and all that stuff. I mean, it's great. And you can go to the library and still find those books. In fact, I was in an antique store here in Portland. They had those books there, and I was tempted to buy them all. But anyway, I didn't. But in my library, here at the office, I mean, I have the library that I have online. It's aftermath.media. You can go there and sign up for it. So I have the library online, and I have the library in my office with books everywhere. And last night, I got off the air, and I stayed behind for a while. And I was looking over two books in particular. I thought thumbing through would give me some ideas for tonight's show. One was called The Black Arts by Richard Cavendish. And then there's The Book of the Damned by Charles Fort. Now, in Cavendish's book, I learned a lot about, well, a lot of things I learned were about, like, numerology, for example, and how we empower numbers and letters and sigils. But numbers and letters especially caught my attention. And I was reading about how in early Christianity, early Christians were the ones who empowered numbers. A lot of the things we hear about, numerology, astrology, all these things, as much as Christians hate to say it, that they don't believe in it, or that it's not, it was a part of early Christianity for the longest time. I mean, what were the three wise men, but, you know, astrologers that came to look for the king, and they saw it in the stars, and if everything's written in the stars, signs and wonders in the heavens. I mean, all this stuff was all about astrology. But then there were numbers that were empowered. Numbers were given meaning, like 666 and 70 times 7 and 144,000. And all these numbers mean something in the Bible. And there were other numeric signposts, too, that had occult meanings. Letters and symbols, they were effective tools to empower seers and alchemists, very much like the sigils that are empowered for spells and divination. We know that we use the alphabet, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. We use the alphabet to communicate with one another. But I think a lot of people don't know that there are also strange alphabets in words that were only used by the adepts and seers. And they use those alphabets, those strange alphabets, and those strange numbers so they can communicate with angels and demons. Now, many of the ancient prophets that had a hand in writing the Bible and other ancient texts relied on what is called automatic writing, meaning that they were merely scribes that wrote on behalf of divine spirits. And of course, we know that some of them wrote on behalf of God, as every symbol, letter, and number were given through the seer and were put down on scrolls, tablets, metal plates, you name it. So in Christian numeric symbolism, the number 8, I learned, or the symbol that we see that represents 8 pieces of whatever, was originally and still is the symbol that represents life after death. The symbol, as we see, as the number 7, represents life. It included every aspect of it, meaning birth, change, and death. And this was repeated in cycles of 6 and ending on the Sabbat, or the 7th cycle. Right now we are in the 6th cycle. So anything beyond that cycle, or beyond 7, was world to come. So think about that. Number 8 is the world to come. The 8th day, the 8th hour. As a result of 8 or beyond 7 or beyond life, we look at kingdom come, or eternity to infinity, beyond the physical, into the new life, from death to life. So anciently, it was concluded anatomically that man had 7 orifices on his body, but a woman had 8 orifices. And the 8th orifice was the gateway through which life enters the world. So the number of man, believe it or not, was a 6. And he was created on the 6th day at a time known as the 6th age, or the 6th cycle of the world. So the primary component of blood is the key to your carbon life form, which is reduced down into components of 6 protons, 6 neutrons, and 6 electrons. 666. very, very important number. Not just the number of the beast, but it's the number of a man. So man was given blood, and flowing through him is a living soul that, according to the book I read, The Dark Arts, the soul is actually light. Every single one of us have the light that burns, and that light leaves the body upon death. So you go from the six, meaning the man, six protons, six neutrons, six electrons, your carbon life form is reduced to that. You also have life at seven, which is birth, change, death, and then number eight is beyond life, kingdom come. And the thing about the number eight, what's interesting is that if you turn the number eight on its side, it too represents infinity. So the numbers, the symbols, the sigils, the letters. The numbers, the symbols, the sigils, and the letters all influence how we communicate with one another, but they also help us communicate with the dead. Just something we're going to talk about coming up on Ground Zero as we approach Halloween. Halloween, the time of not just the dead, but the spirit world. Kingdom come, eternity and infinity, the eight on its side, coming up on Ground Zero. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Why do you think they call it October? Octavia? Octagon? Eight. 877-733-1011. We'll be back with more Ground Zero. Don't go away.
FM News 101 KXL.
This is Ground Zero on FM News 101.
I'm Clay Lewis. You're listening to Ground Zero. The number eight, the symbol of infinity, as above, so below. The underworld and what is above, the number eight, on its side, infinity. Octo, October, eight. It's all about what is beyond this life. That's what Halloween is about. It's not a satanic holiday. It's a holiday that focuses on life after death in the spirit world. And it also focuses on numbers, symbols, sigils, and letters. And this is why many people at this time do a lot of experimentation with things like Ouija boards and tarot cards and using oracles of divination. Now, believe it or not, this type of activity went on like the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century, and went on before then as well. And even though a lot of people condemn it, saying, oh, you're not supposed to do this, for centuries, Christians and Jews were saying, well, you know, we feel as though that the dead need to be contacted. We feel as though those who did not hear the word or have the light also need to be spoken with. We need to find out if they have accepted the light or accepted the word on the other side. It's just the way it is. I mean, going from purgatory to heaven or hell was something that a lot of people worried about. And for centuries, Christians and Jews revered Hebrew as the divine language. And it was the speech that was given by God. It was a speech actually that God gave. He was the God of Israel, Jehovah, was actually speaking in Hebrew. Hebrew is not only the language which Jehovah revealed himself, but also the ancient scholars believed that it was the language that commanded the universe into being. And all things were spoken into open creation with light, and with light came all the communication and frequency, all in mathematical order, everything in its place, and God had everything numbered and mathematically in order, taking chaos and making it order, again, with numbers, symbols, sigils, and letters. And we see words and numbers, and the reason why we see words and numbers is because particles of light, photons, had bounced off the screen or paper, and then they reach your eyes. And each photon on that path carries with it some information about the surface it is bounced from. And that happens at the speed of light. And each particle makes up the body, and each body possesses many particles of light, which animate what is called the soul, the light, the sun, soul, same thing. So the soul or what happens after death is certainly where the soul is, where it goes, is most important of this season now. The life after the world kingdom come. See, Halloween is not the holiday for the devil. I have to stress this, because it's the holiday to remember the afterworld. And if you wish, you can remember the underworld, or the upside down, the underworld where the dead reside, and how light and shadow are cast in order to somehow show the world hereafter. And that's the thing about light and shadow. Light and shadow have to have a duality and balance in order for all of this to work. Okay. Nothing is evil if you are taking on the shadow and the light and bringing it into the forefront. Some people, though, see it as evil, letting any darkness in, but the darkness gets in no matter what, because darkness is the absence of light. So bringing light into the darkness, bringing the duality. And the question is how to get a glimpse of the world, or the afterworld, or the world above, so below. Remember the number 8, as above, so below. How do you get a glimpse of that world, the other side, kingdom come, using light, shadow, numbers, letters, and symbols? Well, there are many ways to do this. One is to put yourself into a trance, put yourself into this affirmation mode, into this light mode into your brain. In fact, Charles Fort, Book of the Damned, Charles Fort explained that all people have a tendency to be hypnotic. And he has said that if the proper authority saw to it, that the proper belief would be introduced or induced, the people would believe properly like good little sheep. And he also believed that if God was the universal mind, he didn't always have to act in a manner that was sane, meaning there's the dark side of God and there's the lighter side of God. So this is why we live in this remarkable world that goes very crazy, is because people, like gods, have these dual personalities. It's said that we live in perilous times, and often, while in the middle of them, we seem to have some sort of epiphany that while we believe our little paranormal thoughts in church, we can openly pretend that no one answers prayers or doles out miracles or scrawls out little words on a Ouija board. So, when we hear of what can be termed doom or doom porn, we can become introspective and we ask ourselves, is life worth living? Well, the sad thing is that even as we ask ourselves that question, we're convinced that the answer is no. Even with all the frightening and crazy things I report on right here at Ground Zero, I believe that life is worth living. I'm always of the opinion that I want to see what happens next. And if I die, I think I'll miss out on all the fun that comes next. And whatever comes to us, I mean, we're all waiting for some sign. We're all waiting to go out with a whimper or with a rapture or some other cataclysm. But see, the thing is, we have access to kingdom come. We know that we can build a world that'll be better. We know that through reverse causality, we can plan for the best while we're experiencing the worst. Okay? And it may be a little scary to find out just how we go about it. And what we need to do, though, is we need to take in everything from mythologies to superstitions to numbers and symbols and letters to light and shadow. And we bring it all together, and this is where we live, and this is how we think and prosper in times where we feel that there is nothing left and we should give up. No one should give up because of kingdom come. No one should give up because of eternal life and eternal splendor in the presence of all light, universal light, love, and security. That should be the message of Halloween. And there are a lot of things that you can do to find out if it's true or not. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. The unfortunate thing is most people are too scared to dabble in those areas. But tonight, we may just dabble, and you'll be able to see firsthand how it all operates. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. I'm Clyde Lewis. You're listening to Ground Zero, and we'll be back.
FM News 101 KXL.
I'm Clyde Lewis. Have you ever wondered how I come up with a lot of ideas and some of the research I do and where I get my materials? Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity to have all those materials. some past Ground Zero shows and other things that we've explored. We have a little library called Ground Zero Aftermath. It is an exclusive online library and resource center consisting of research material from the Vault of Ground Zero. This includes rare PDFs of books, videos, and audio recordings, links, articles, and commentary used by me in preparation for each show I do. Webinars will also be included with your subscription. In addition, you'll gain access to our comprehensive and ever-expanding news outlet, Newscifer. So, go to aftermath.media, that's aftermath.media. Members receive a protected password via email along with weekly updates. Again, it's aftermath.media, just aftermath.media.
More with Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
Hell is overflowing. And Satan is sending his dead to us. When there is no more room in hell, the dead will walk
in human nature, and this is why people go to see horror movies today. There's a certain tribulation.
Against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realm,
Improvised search parties are attempting to find it. Just what it is, no one is sure.
Strange creatures of light in the sky, animals of now dead, drained of blood, strange brain bone halls with serious
God, it's not here.
Listening to Ground Zero. Numbers to call tonight, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. You know, I was asked once what my favorite topics are that I cover here on Ground Zero, and I said, well, I love the shows that frighten me. I like shows that scare me to death. I really do. I mean, and I love it when the listeners scare me, too. If they ever get me, I always laugh, because, you know, sometimes they do that. But I like a lot of the shows that deal with a subject I call synchromysticism, meaning that if something synchronous happens, something like, oh, like the other night when Danielle called, and then Tony called and said, well, Danielle said she lost her child, and she thought that what she was hearing with the EVP was her lost child, and then Tony called, and he said that he too lost a child, and her name was Danielle. And I thought that was amazingly synchronistic and scary. And in fact, a number of people that were producing the show that night were all shaking their heads going, this is unbelievable. And so, like I say, stuff like that, coincidences and synchromysticism, just adds deeper meaning to the overall event, the overall show. And some people say that synchromysticism is purely a fixation on certain numbers and statistics and conditions that may or may not be meaningful to the groupthink. I think a lot of people paid attention to that, you know, when we had that situation go down. But sometimes we experience something that they call the Oz factor, where we are the only person who can see the coincidence, or we're the only person that has this meaningful idea or epiphany or synchronicity when we're listening to something or we are, you know, we're watching something. It's like the idea that, you know, you're humming a tune at the office. You're humming this tune. You got this earwig in your head. You got it in your head and this worm or whatever it is. You get into your car, and sure enough, you turn on the car, and on the radio is the song you've been humming all day. It's kind of random, kind of synchronistic. They call it heliosyncretism because it's like you're synchronizing with the world and the sun. You are the sun, and the universe revolves around you for that moment. And so, you know, you've experienced this, I'm sure. We can say it's completely random, or we can say that it's some sort of supernatural occurrence. And I know that there are coincidences for which no one has or can be expected to have any possible logical, scientific, or rational explanation. I mean, no one can explain, predict, and therefore be able to control the events and phenomena in question. Therefore, we are dealing with something called meaningful coincidence in current events. And one has to remember that what happened in the past, how it applies to the present, and what it means for cause and effect in the future. And of course, if you're planning that far in the future and you're preparing for that future event, you're kind of playing the game of retrocausality. And when you're in that situation, when you find yourself in your own head, it can become a very uncomfortable place. Like tapping into your subconscious can equally be uncomfortable because sometimes it leaves you vulnerable. I remember one time somebody asked me, have you ever done LSD? I go, no. No, I haven't. Have you ever done DMT? No, I haven't. Well, they say that if you do LSD, you'll find out more about yourself. Believe me, I know enough about myself. I don't need to find out the crazy self. I don't need to trip on drugs. But see, that's the thing. Getting down and dirty into that unconscious or subconscious mind is something that may be scary. That's dream time for people. Sometimes dream time is pleasant when you're sleeping. Sometimes it's not so pleasant. And so you find yourself again in this nightmare world, this demon-haunted world that is most certainly a world but is poisoned in some way. Something very powerful has caused a glitch in the matrix. And the veil thins in these times of chaos. The veil is thinner in the month of October. People are beginning to see the demons appear out of nowhere. The chaos that surrounds us today is generating an environment where demons that we once thought were imaginary are very real and appear openly from time to time to remind us that they are here to thwart the progression of mankind. See, it's no longer rare to see a million people today that are nothing more than shells of what they once were. It's not rare now to see people angrier than they once were. It's not rare now to see the absurdities that are in this world. The clownish metaphor, if you will. There's also that metaphor of the walking dead, the zombies. It's not lost on those who are aware of how the demonic world is very real. And that there needs to be a concerted effort to try and foster a sense of peace and well-being in our lives. Something out there is straining on its leash. It's howling at the gates of hell. It seems that the metaphor of the angels and the demons coming together for battle, well, that sounds like it's being brought forth, isn't it? I mean, this happened before. It's happening again. And every monster you can imagine is about to appear in various places. Every spirit that speaks from the grave will also impart valuable information for the living. Many people have been contacted. Many have the opportunity to contact them. And the question is, how do you do it? Well, the same way the ancients did it, right? Through automatic writing, and of course, numbers, symbols, sigils and letters. I mean, the best way to resolve the ambiguity surrounding death would be to talk to people who have died. And consequently, there has long been keen interest and finding a way to communicate with the dead. In a lot of respects, the practice comes with intrigue and warning that if you seek divination, necromancy is a substitute for spiritualism. You must also use rationalism to avoid what is called progressive voluntary entrapment. There are many ways people gather to contact the dead. Two of the most popular are a regular seance, of course, and then, you know, you have a medium in the seance, and the use of a Ouija board is another way it's done. I mean, these talking boards have become a controversial way to accomplish contact with the dead, but there are also many factors that point to the idea that a session with the board can also dig deep into the subconscious mind, where you become a medium and channel to the board what is deep inside of you. While doing a Ouija board, you wonder, are the demons coming to me? Are the spirits coming to me? No. They're coming outside of you. They're coming from within you. Everything that comes out of that board is somewhere deep in the Akashic record, somewhere deep in your cells. The trauma handed from generation to generation, the scares and the fears and the end of the world that your ancestors saw is buried deep within your subconscious mind. See, Ouija boards have been a topic of scientists and science. Of course, scientists say that they're not powered by spirits or demons. I know it's disappointing, but it's also potentially useful because they're powered by you. Even when we protest that we're not even doing it, we're not moving the planchet, we swear. No, I swear, I didn't move it. Ouija boards work on a principle known to those who study the mind for more than 160 years. It's called the ideomotor effect. Back in 1852, there was a physician and psychologist named William Benjamin Carpenter, and he published a report for the Royal Institute of Great Britain. And what he did is he examined these automatic muscular movements that take place without the conscious will or volition of the individual. So this means that the board itself is nothing more than a theatrical tool to channel what is being relayed through the bodies of those who touch it. See, that's what mediums do. Mediums open themselves up to the world, the spirit world, and the world hereafter. And all of these spirits and entities and lights enter in, and all of the knowledge that this light imparts comes through the medium. And when you place your hands on that planchette, and when you look down at that board, you are opening yourself up to being that medium. You're like a medium. Most mediums put themselves in trances, and they do the same thing without the use of a Ouija board. And yet, most people have no problem seeking out a medium. I mean, I can go down the street to a fortune teller or to a medium, or I can listen to a psychic. I can have a psychic on my show tonight on the phone, and I'd say, hey, call the program. You'll get your psychic reading. People will be on that like Blue Bonnet. They'll say, yes, I want a psychic reading. I want one now. But I say, I'm going to give your psychic reading from a Ouija board. And I'm going to go, no. If I were to hold a pendulum over you and say a yes-no question to the pendulum, and it moves in a circular motion or back and forth, that's cool. You get to watch that happen. Say, watch the pendulum. Watch the, and everyone's going, oh, cool, yeah, yeah. Or how about dowsing rods being used in ghost hunts? Or what are those little things you carry around that these meters pick up numbers and lights to see if you've picked up any ghostly activity? Those are all tools. They're not blessed by some satanic magistri or anything. No, and neither is the Ouija board. I know the Ouija board has received an unnecessarily bad reputation. And a lot of people don't know why. Oh, yeah, I know somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody that had a Ouija board session where she freaked out and jumped out a window and killed herself. You know, it goes back to the old drug stories, you know. Remember the old drug stories we used to read about? Oh, man, she took some acid. She thought she could fly. She didn't fly. She died. She's dead. Cold dead. Those were the scare stories we heard when we were kids. Reefer madness, smoking dope. Smoke dope. You know what's going to happen to you, man. You lose your brain cells. Yeah. Okay. Ouija boards are the same way. I mean, they've got this bad reputation. But you know where the bad reputation came from? It came from the movie The Exorcist. 1973. Before 1973, everybody said, hey, these boards are cool. 1920s, 1930s. They were used to have some fun at parties. After 1973, when little Reagan played with the board and Captain Howdy showed up and she did the, you know, number on the rug and walked around like a spider and spit blood and pea soup, well, that's what got people to be afraid of the Ouija boards. Like, after watching Psycho. A lot of people stopped taking showers. The theaters stank pretty bad, but yeah, everybody, Jaws, you didn't want to go swimming anymore because of sharks. You don't want to play the Ouija board anymore because you never know what may possess you, right? Yeah. Just because of a little movie called The Exorcist, that the little Ouija board has gotten a bad reputation. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. I'm Clyde Lewis. You're listening to Ground Zero, and we'll be back.
FM News 101 KXL.
From the Pacific Office Automation Studios, this is FM News 101 KXL.
Good to Bob calling in from Massachusetts tonight. Hi, Bob. You're on Ground Zero.
Hey, Clyde.
Hey, man.
Yeah, so I had an experience with a Ouija board probably about 25, 30 years ago when I was in the Army.
Okay, what happened?
And like what you were just saying, where it's muscle control on the planchette.
Uh-huh.
I really have to believe it is more than that. It is a portal.
Well, it comes through you. What you've done is it comes through you. You are like the channeler. So, yes, you're opening yourself up like a portal, and it draws to you, but it goes through your body into the board. So your muscles and your like idiomotor responses, meaning that you are not consciously moving, but you are moving. And it's like...
Well, see, this is the thing, because we got a little bit outside of moving the planchette around on the board.
All right.
We were in the Army. So we were invincible. So
right.
We could do anything. So what we were doing is we were taking usually cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
We'd take two glasses. We'd put one on the floor and one on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of a couple hours, you could actually see the cocktail on the board go down a bit.
Oh my gosh!
We'd take cigarettes and stand them on end, light them both, stand them on end, one off the board, one on the board, and you could watch the cigarette on the board actually look like it took a drawer off it.
I've never heard this before. This is terrifying.
So, yeah, it was. It was when it happened.
I just put a cigarette on the board and it just took a big drag. There you go. That's scary. I mean, I can just imagine that.
One night, after like 2 weeks of doing this,
right.
We were sitting there one night using the board, and we had gotten a lot of information out of it. We were talking to a spirit named Han, H-A-N.
Han.
He was an immigrant that lived in Savannah, and he burned in a fire one night. And we talked to him. I mean, this was over the course of a couple of weeks that we just got that little bit of information out of him, throwing out his name and what happened to him.
Right.
Toward the end of it, we literally could see the planchette, like, moving slower on the board. And he said he was getting weaker from our contact with him because we were giving him alcohol and cigarettes.
Oh, my gosh.
And eventually, we lost him. And when we lost him, the night that we lost him, two of the guys said they saw a head come up out of the board. But we were sitting in an Army barracks that had a big window. It got absolutely black and cold in the room.
Mm-hmm.
We had a candle going, that went out, and they saw this head come up out of the board. And it never worked after that. We never saw the planchette move again after that.
We did a Ouija board session once with some friends of mine, and while we were doing it, we were told that the person on the board lived like something like 2,000 or 1,000 years ago, almost to the time of Jesus, and was talking to us. And the last words from him, I don't remember his name, the last words from him were, "Take a picture of the mirror." And I thought, well, that's weird for someone to request that. Says, well, you can make pictures, right, without paintings. And we said, yes. I said, well, then take a picture of the mirror. And when we did, you could see in the mirror all of the men standing there that he claimed he was around talking through the board to us. It was just an amazing thing. They were all wearing robes. They all had beards. It was weird. It was just strange. We saw them in the mirror.
It is a portal.
Well, it opens one. The board itself is not a portal. It opens one, and you're the person that is the conduit. You are the transmitter. The board has nothing to do with it. In fact, you can do it without the board. You can actually do it without the board. All you got to do is just sit there and allow the thoughts, like Charles Ford said, we're all hypnotics in some way. So let yourself feel everything within the ether, the ethereal feelings, and soon you'll be finding yourself channeling and automatic writing, and you don't need a board. The board is just there for show. It's kind of theatrics, but still, you get a bad rap, I think. But if you've had a Ouija board experience you want to tell me about, just to scare me, I'd love to hear from you. Coming up, we have a lot of great guests to talk about the largest Ouija board ever constructed. And that's coming up on Ground Zero. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Back with more Ground Zero. Don't go away.
FM News 101 KXL.
Ronnie's with us, and he's here to talk about CBD, the joy of CBD. Why is it so joyful? Well, it helps you with a lot of things, and the essential oils are really important to your health. Isn't that right, Ronnie?
Absolutely. In fact, it has been so important. There's an article in Arizona that basically police officers are starting to use CBD. It's making them do a better job because they're sharper and they're not as nervous and not as much anxiety. So it's awesome.
So when you ingest CBD, what does it do for the body?
It's inflammatory. Basically, it kills the inflammation. It drops the inflammation. Anxiety, it drops that as well. Just kind of makes you sharp, and it doesn't drug you out because there's no THC.
Also, if you use it on your body, how does that affect things?
I always like to direct people to the salve. Basically, if you have some kind of problem and you put that CBD salve on in your neck and your elbow and your knees, whatever, you will have less pain.
Sounds fantastic. Where do I pick up this wonderful CBD?
AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Fantastic.
Eyes upon you, staring straight down and keenly through, seeing all that you are and everything that you can never be. Yes, an eye is upon you, an eye ready to blink. So face forward, with arms wide open and mind reeling. Your future has arrived. Are you ready to go?
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Ouija."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"Ouija."
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
I'm Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. The numbers to call tonight, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Tonight we explore the Ouija board. We've done it before on the program. We're going to do it again tonight. And once again, I assure you that I don't think when they made the Ouija board, they thought, I think we're going to make a little board that opens the gates of hell. I don't think that was on anyone's mind when they started to make the boards. In fact, I think they were curious about what they could do to open America's wallets. And you know, they were actually giving people something to have hope for. Because, I mean, the Ouija board began its popularity after the Civil War. Because a lot of people, of course, would die at young ages. They were, you know, and especially at wartime when people want to contact dead relatives and they figured that this board would work. It was interesting that I remember reading a story somewhere that when they wanted to put a patent on the Ouija board, they went to the chief patent officer and he said, well, I'm not going to put a patent on this unless the board can accurately spell out my name. And so the investors didn't know the name of the patent officer. So they sat down, they did a Ouija board session in front of the patent officer, and what happened? The spirits on the planchette faithfully spelled out the patent officer's his name. And so the patent officer had no idea how it happened. He had no, he didn't know how the device worked. He just said, well, apparently it does. And so all this ambiguity and mystery was part of more or less the conscious marketing effort of the Ouija board. Came with no instructions, and many people argue that it doesn't need instructions, and of course it doesn't, but a lot of people don't give it a bad rap. And I say, they're not. They're not a bad thing. I mean, Ouija board has certainly received a lot of unnecessarily bad rep, a bad reputation, and many people think, well, why? It's just a harmless board. Well, I think it's because of what happened in The Exorcist, 1973. I think The Exorcist terrified a lot of people in theaters back in 1973. I mean, when you have all the pea soup and head spinning and blood and everything, and then the implication of a 12-year-old girl was possessed by a demon after playing with the Ouija board, it basically changes how people see a board, I think. I mean, it's the same effect that Psycho had on a lot of people. I'm not going to shower. No. I'll bathe before I shower. Some people wouldn't shower at all because they were afraid to get in the shower because of Psycho. And then, of course, Jaws came out and everybody was afraid to go swimming. So I think a lot of the time when people say, oh, Ouija boards are evil, I think it's because they remember what happened to little Reagan when she was playing with the Ouija board in The Exorcist, because almost overnight the Ouija board became a tool of the devil. And for that reason, it doesn't help when people continue to push the ideas that the board is a switchboard to hell. A lot of horror writers continue to use the board to rip apart the bodies of co-eds. And of course, like any other ghost hunting tool, the board can be effective in brushing up on ghost hunters' channeling skills. I mean, if you have to somehow get over the fact that for some unfounded reason, Ouija boards have been denounced by religious groups as Satan's preferred method of communication, when Satan has better things to do than to hang out on a board game. Hell, I told all my friends that when I die, I want Ouija board duty because I want to scare the hell out of teenagers. That's what I want after I die. But here's something even more scary than that, all right? So you think a small little board with numbers and letters on it and goodbye and hello on it is pretty scary. What if I were to tell you that there is a 9,000-pound board? It's about 3,168 square feet, and it's in Salem, Massachusetts right now. It's made a lot of news lately. It's amazing to look at. And what's really funny is that I remember a friend of mine and I, we were going to go to Burning Man and we wanted to make a big board like this, but Rick Schreck, the creator of this board, beat us all to it. It's an amazing board. I mean, I love boards. I used to collect them. I had some friends who collected them. We even did the Dia de los Muertos boards, which we had, which were really cool. But this one, I think, is the ultimate collector's item. I don't think anybody's going to be packing with them to any parties. They're calling this thing Ouijazilla. It's quite amazing. So tonight, we had to get two important people on the program to talk about this. We have Karen A. Dahlman, who's the director of the Talking Boards Historical Society. She's a paranormal researcher and she's also the author of The Spirits of the Ouija, Four Decades of Communication. As a leading expert, a Ouija practitioner, she has been using the Ouija board since 1973 with astounding results. Within her message, Karen shares the positive side to Ouija boards as a tool for exploring consciousness, which includes the afterlife. Also, the higher self and the sentient beings that exist among us within the unseen dimensions. Karen holds a master's degree from the University of New Mexico in art, psychotherapy, and is licensed counselor and experienced hypnosis, past life regression, and channeling. She's a talk show host of Creative Visions TV, and she speaks and teaches at paranormal and spiritual conferences and events around the country overseas. And, of course, we have the inventor of Ouijazilla himself, a true Jersey devil, Rick or Mortis Schreck. He's the owner and operator of the House of 1,000 Tattoos in Middlesex, New Jersey. And, of course, they're both on the program tonight on Ground Zero. Welcome, guys, to the show.
What's up?
Thanks for having us.
Oh, my gosh, Rick, I gotta talk to you first, man. So did you start building this in New Jersey and then huffed it over to Salem, Massachusetts? I mean, give me the story here.
Well, a buddy of mine works for a trucking company, and I was tattooing him at my shop. And I told him I had this idea to do the World's Largest Ouija board, but I couldn't afford all the wood. And they build shipping crates bigger than my tattoo shop. And he goes, man, I got more wood than you could ever use. I'll give you whatever you need. So I drew out a chart, and I said, would you be able to spare 99 panels? He's like, no problem. He had them delivered, and I hand-painted each one in the tattoo shop. It took me about a year and a half, and then they built the shipping crates for me. We brought it to Salem, and it took us over 20 hours to assemble the thing, and at least 12 of us doing it.
That's a lot of heavy lifting, though. How much is each panel? How much does that weigh?
70 pounds, 3/4 inch.
Wow. It also has an active planchette, too. I saw you had a huge planchette. How did you build that?
Well, the planchette weighs about 400 pounds, and originally it was on three legs, like a real planchette. And my idea was to make it glide like it's on ball bearings. So the original legs had overturned stainless steel bowls that I got from Walmart, filled with felt, and they had bowling balls in them. So the thing was resting on bowling balls in steel bowls. And it worked great until I assembled it, and it moved, but it would move and stop. Like, you would really have to push it hard to move it. So the night before we went to Salem, I was like, okay, man, I'm just going to run to the hardware store and buy caster wheels that hold like 400 pounds a piece. And those things work. They make it effortless. So you can actually move that 15-foot planchette with one hand.
Wow. And so is it on display? Is it? I mean, do people come in and do they try to work the Ouija board? No?
No, it was only there. Salem only gave us a permit for a one-day event. And so it took us 3 days to assemble it. And we had it there for one day. And then the following day, especially Karen talked me into staying. I didn't want to stay. I wanted to get the thing home. But we stayed for an extra day. And it took about more than 10 hours to take apart.
Wow.
And the following day, it went back to New Jersey. It's in a warehouse now.
So, Karen, was it your idea to set this whole thing up and to make this event happen? Because it's an amazing event, and it got word all over the world about this amazing board.
Yeah, we're very thrilled about that. But no, one of the members of the Talking Board Historical Society named John Kozik, he lives near Salem, and he got it all worked out with the city of Salem, the permits, the approval, everything we needed. He did so much groundwork for us there so that Rick would have a place to show his board. You know, Rick would have showed it anywhere. It didn't matter. But we really liked the idea of being in Salem because they do support the Ouija board and all kinds of really cool stuff around Halloween.
So who came by and looked at it? Did you get a lot of critical people going, how dare you? Or did you get a lot of people who were really open to it, Karen?
There was more.
We really
more
got a lot of people
on the internet.
Happy about it.
What's that, Rick? What'd you say?
There was more negativity on the internet than there was in person. We got nothing but an incredible response, and all the locals were saying it was the coolest thing they'd ever seen in town.
And Karen, what were you saying about the board and the response that you got?
Yeah, it was fantastic. People came out, and actually, we're still getting contacts today saying, oh, why'd you take it down? We wanted to see it. And people heard about it on the internet on that Saturday the 12th is when we opened it and revealed it to the public. And they were driving in. They were flocking in, seriously, to come see it. And some people just got there just in time to take some pictures with it. Others came a little too late. But it was, like as Rick said, we had a lot of great comments and feedback, and everybody loved taking pictures with it. It really was an ultimate scene there for the Halloween month.
All right, well, we're going to ask you more questions, Karen and Rick. Rick Schreck with us, the inventor of Ouijazilla, is with us tonight. We're so glad to have him on the program. And, of course, Karen Dahlman, who is with us tonight, the director of the Talking Board Historical Society. Ouijazilla is a 9,000-pound Ouija board. It's you can park, gosh, I don't know, a lot. I was reading somewhere that you can park, like, maybe, I don't know, three or four 18-wheelers on top of this thing if you wanted to. It's that big, and you got the planchette that's about 400 pounds. What an amazing feat this board is. So Rick Schreck, of course, is the guy who, he's the vice president of the Talking Board Historical Society, put together Ouijazilla on the program tonight. If you have any questions, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. We'll be back.
FM News 101 KXL.
Things that go bump in the night. Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis.
If Ouija boards scare you, especially the small boards you get at a toy store, then Ouijazilla will terrify you completely into the next world. Ouijazilla is a completely functional and outfitted Ouija board with planchette that weighs about 400 pounds. It is about 3,168 square feet. Whether or not it can summon spirits remains to be seen, but it weighs 9,000 pounds. And tonight, our guests are, well, basically Rick Schreck, the man who created it. He is the vice president of the Talking Board Society, and also Karen A. Dahlman. She's been on the program before. She's the director of the Talking Board Historical Society and a paranormal researcher. So I guess the question, Rick, is that if people, and Karen mentioned this, if people are, like, disappointed when the board gets taken down and probably moved back to New Jersey, wouldn't you be thinking about getting someone who could organize a tour and that maybe you can set this up elsewhere?
Well, there's going to be some events in the very near future that are already in the works. But you know what? I come from the school of thought. You always leave them wanting more.
Yeah, I guess you do leave them wanting more. But I tell you what, just it looks like just to experience it would be amazing. You know, it'd be just to see something that remarkable. And I was able to actually get a look. Somebody had taken an overhead photo of it. And what I find remarkable, and maybe Karen, you can comment on this, the Ouija board actually gives specific instructions on how to use it. I think that's amazing. What do you think about that, Karen?
Yeah, Rick has a great sense of humor. He placed what he calls the board rules at the top of the board. And, you know, you and I have spoken about this before, Clyde. I don't really believe in the board rules. And I know Rick is probably more tongue-in-cheek about it. But these are the things you'll find on the Internet and a lot of the fears people have about how and where and why and what not to do when you use a board, such as it says, never use a board in a graveyard. Don't ask when you're going to die. Don't ask where the buried gold is.
Right.
So it's more of a humor to the board, but it's something that's like a stigma that comes along with the board. If you go on social media, you'll find these so-called rules.
I was always thought the rules were there to protect people. I mean, I was always told never ask a Ouija board when you're going to die because, well, there's always that story that if you ask a Ouija board when you're going to die, a week later you'll be fine floating in the river somewhere. I remember that when I was a kid. But I was always taught, you know, you don't ask it when you're going to die. Never use it alone. Never use it in a place where traumas happen. Like, never take it to a place where, a group of people were slaughtered and then you go and do the Ouija board and try and contact the murderers. I mean, those are things I think are common sense, wouldn't you say?
Well, yeah, absolutely, in one regard. So people like to have criteria or parameters around their use of this tool, which I support. I mean, if somebody's not using this tool, you probably do want to have some kind of parameters around it. If you've been using it for a while and you have different beliefs about it that you feel like you're going to be able to make contact, as you mentioned earlier, Clyde, in your opening statement, about this is really, the board is nothing negative. If negativity comes through, really check your own inner thoughts and feelings, is that's what you're going to attract to yourself when you use a tool. So it's good to have parameters, good to have some rules, I think, for some people. But for others, like for me, I consider it more just that's humorous. That's Rick being funny. But I don't think we need to try to control the Ouija session so much, because then what you're really doing is controlling your own ability to do mediumistic work if that's what you choose to do, as you mentioned earlier.
Well, yeah, and I agree. I think there's some things. I've used the board a couple times during seances. I've used the board sometimes on ghost hunts to try and contact. We had a really strange Ouija board session that happened at a place that was haunted one time, and we even went to great lengths to, we went very, very over the top with protection and all that, and it didn't work. We had something happen that went down that it's because somebody who was in the session we were with was had been drinking. And I have a rule. I have a rule that if you're going to come to a seance or a Ouija board session, you cannot be high and you cannot be drunk. Because if you come in and you do those two things, you're liable to upset whatever's on the board, and this is something we don't want. And that just happened to be, there was this old theater we went into that was a bar. We spent the night there, and we had a room that was set aside with a very quiet room where we did a Ouija board session. Somebody came in, a woman who was drunk, and apparently, we didn't know this, but she was pregnant. And the Ouija board said she was pregnant, and to get her out of the room because some demon wants to attack her. And that demon happened to be a demon called Obi-Sooth. And we had no idea who Obi-Sooth was, only that it was the demon that ate children. And she wanted to sue me. She said, well, I'm going to sue you because you allowed a demon to come into the house. I did not. I said, and besides, I think if this was to go to court and I said that you were drinking and you were damaging your child, I think this would be a lot different story. So it was a very, very strange night for sure, because what had happened is many of the women that were at the seance actually doubled over in pain because they were feeling something in their gut. They didn't know what it was, and they were doubled over in pain when they were in. I panicked. I never had anything happen to me like this before. And but something was in the room, and like I said, and I said to other people, it would have come into the room anyway. You don't need a board to have that come in. This type of stuff, if you open yourself up to it, certainly will you'll get visits, and you'll have all kinds of interesting things happen to you.
That's absolutely right. I remember we talked about that story before. The other thing, what I say, there is a rule I have, and it's don't mix spirits with spirits.
Right.
So I will never use the board if somebody's been drinking. I won't drink either if I'm going to use the board. I want to have my vehicle, my vessel, myself as a channel, mm-hmm. to be clear, because mm-hmm. it is me doing the work. The board does nothing.
Right.
And that's really critical for everybody out there listening. I highly recommend you don't get high or get, you know, drunk or whatever. Use the board. Yeah. That's when you start causing all kinds of issues.
Well, yeah, and that's the reason why at parties, you know, you hear all these horror stories from teenagers saying, we were playing with the board, my friend got possessed, or, you know, all this other crazy stuff. And it's because, well, yeah, of course, you guys were probably hitting the bong a little too hard, or you were doing something else, and this is why you got into this psychosis while using the board, the what they call progressive entrapment situations that happen. Karen Dahlman's with us tonight on Ground Zero, coming up more from Rick Schreck as well. He's the man who created Ouijazilla. It's a huge Ouija board. We'll talk more about that coming up on Ground Zero. And your calls. Call up at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Is a Ouija board harmless, or is it a tool of the devil? Well, maybe a little of both if you have something inside of you that's kind of biting at you from inside, something evil or dark. Well, we'll find out. 877-733-1011. Back with more Ground Zero. Don't go away.
FM News 101 KXL.
On the phone with me is Ronnie from GetTheTea.com. Hey, Ronnie, it is the tea that makes you go, I know this because I use it. My favorite is pomegranate. What kind of flavors are there to choose from with this wonderful tea?
You can do pomegranate. You can do just the straight, which is real good. And also we have a mint, a peppermint. People really love that one, too. And we have a couple new flavors on the way, which I will not discuss yet, but where they're coming.
You know, a lot of people don't know that peppermint is a very, very good supplement to keep the stomach happy. It relaxes the intestines, and once again, it makes you feel better because it allows them to move around and get that stuff out of you, that bad stuff out of you.
Absolutely. This is a digest mover, so people have a hard time digesting stuff, or you get something stuck, or maybe you're a real heavy meat eater. Nothing wrong with meat, but it does take quite a long time to get through the stomach. So the tea is wonderful. That's why it's tagline, the tea that makes you go.
If I want my life to change and get the tea, where do I go to get it?
GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea, T-E-A.com.
Fantastic.
More with Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
My name is Tess Carpenter. I innocently played with some friends. We came across an entity that can get rid of him.
Some have called thee mighty and dreadful. Thou art not so. Though soonest our best men with thee go, rest of their bones and souls delivery. But those thou dost thinkest thou dost overthrow, die not the poor death. Nor canst thou kill me.
Is there a spirit with us tonight?
Yes.
Mike Lewis. You are listening to Ground Zero. Numbers to call tonight, 877-733-1011. Yes, the talking board is back for Halloween. Ouija board. But this time we got the biggest one. That's right. Our Ouija board's bigger than your Ouija board. Well, not really. I mean, it's kind of like we're kind of doing this by proxy. Rick Schreck, who is a tattoo artist and the vice president of the Talking Board Historical Society, on the program with us tonight, along with Karen Dahlman, who is the director of the Talking Board Historical Society. We're talking about Ouijazilla. Of course, left New Jersey and wound up in Salem, Massachusetts, and then now it's back somewhere. But still, it's an amazing thing. So I didn't ask you, Rick. I mean, what was your fascination into the boards? How long ago were you fascinated? Where did you begin?
I started collecting in 1992. That was the first year I ever went to Salem, Massachusetts, and it happened to be the 300th anniversary of the Salem Witch Trials. So I fell in love with the place. It took me about 7-8 years, and when I met my wife in 1999, I told her I was a Ouija board collector. I had like 7 of them.
Wow.
Now I have about 200.
You know, I used to collect them too, but then afterwards I sold them off to certain people. I had this really old one that looked like it was from the 1920s, and then I had this friend of mine that I got a Dia de los Muertos Ouija board that was hand-painted that I really enjoyed. And then now if you go to ghost conferences, there's a guy here in Portland that makes Ouija boards, but he makes like Star Trek Ouija boards and Star Wars Ouija boards, and there's also another talking board. I can't remember what we used. It was a guy whose dad, I guess, was a serial killer, and he made a board, and we were using that board, too. We probably still have it in the office somewhere. Yeah. Ron's listening. I ought to bring it in because that was a weird board. We even used it on the air. It was really creepy that we used it. So, yeah, there are a lot of cool boards out there. I know your board is the ultimate, Rick, but what is your favorite board?
My favorite board of them all is actually not a mass-produced board. It's a Cthulhu board by this guy. He goes by the name Craig Hunt.
Uh-huh.
And he was making them back in 2008. They're highly sought after. I have 3 of them. He gifted one to me that was a factory production error.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually calls it the suicide board because the place that was making it, somebody had committed suicide across the street, mm-hmm. in a building across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that owned the print shop refused to print any more of the boards because he got all superstitious about it. So this one was left behind and had a lot of stain stuck on it and like polyurethane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all damaged. And he sent it to me and he wrote the whole story on the back of the board. That's probably my favorite one of them all.
Yeah, you know, here's some synchronicity for you. Guess what the show was about last night? Cthulhu. We talked about Cthulhu last night, so you know, I guess the spirit of Cthulhu is alive and well, not only on the show and not only with the strange creatures they're seeing in South American oceans, but certainly, you know, this is definitely a theme going on here, a running theme. And so, Karen, you've been busy writing books. I mean, you've been writing some really scary stuff. Tell us about your books.
Yeah, well, I love to write about the Ouija board because I've been using the board for, get this, Clyde, 46 years now. It's been a while.
Yeah, all right.
And by the way, that serial killer board is called Bob's board.
Yeah, Bob's board. We had you on for Bob's board, did we not?
That's right.
That's right. We also had Bob's nephew was on the show, too, wasn't he?
That's right.
Yeah.
Talked to him. We talked about the board, and I have that board, too, and I use it sometimes. It's a very interesting, very different-looking board. But, yeah, I write about using the board. I want to say this. The board is just my permission slip. Really, that's what it is, to do this work. I can't say that enough because I think everybody thinks, oh, Ouija board, I got to be scared. A demon's inside of it. But so I really write about the positive side to the board, how it can be used to enlighten your life, to make changes like personal growth or self-help. But also I do communicate with the afterlife, and I do communicate with sentient beings. So I write all about that in my books. And if people aren't into using a Ouija board, one of my books I talk about how to do this without the Ouija board. And I am working on a couple more books right now that goes even deeper into consciousness and what you can explore with the use of this kind of tool.
And, you know, and like I said before, I mean, one of the things I think people don't bring up, and I think you're kind of hinting at, is automatic writing. And so when would you say that a lot of what you write is automatic writing, since you do use the board, and then when you're away from the board, you could be channeling some very interesting interesting people. I know a woman who was a singer here in Portland who they gave them a challenge. They wanted to raise some money for the cemetery nearby, and they gave them a challenge to write songs about famous people that died in the cemetery. And she claims that she did not know anything about the person all that much that she was researching to do a song about, but apparently it was as if that person was telling her everything in dreams and in sequences so she could write a song about it. So she claims that it wasn't written by her, it was written by the spirit of this woman that had passed away in the cemetery.
Yeah, bingo. That's exactly how I work. I'll get on the board, I'll get some ideas, and they help write my books. All my books have been written with the help of the spirit guides or the energies I communicate with. And then I will get off the board, and they'll continue to come through in terms of dreams. I'll be woken up. Usually when I'm working on a book around the clock kind of thing, I'll be woken up at about 2 or 3 in the morning, and they just start telling me all kinds of things. I just quickly write it down, would get up in the morning and read what I wrote, and I'm pretty much amazed. And then they'll come through too, and I'm at the computer, and I just let the flow come out.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprisingly, so it's not such a fight when I write sometimes. And other times I know when it's me writing because I'm like struggling with the words.
Exactly.
With my sentences.
Right.
Exactly. You know how that works. But
yeah, well, there were times
easily when I'm working.
There were times when I do my shows back in the day. I mean, now, of course, I've gotten used to it, and I come in every day and plan and study, and I've been doing this now for about 20 years, so I have a lot of stuff that I recall in the back of my mind. But there were times when I do my shows, I listen back to them, and I'm thinking to myself, that's not me. It's someone who has me and is channeling through me to get this message out. It was usually during shows like this, when we're talking about boards and talking about spirit writing and all that stuff. And so I certainly have an openness to this. By the way, I was just handed the Bob's board we were talking about. So I have a Bob's board in the room. We have different boards. I have my old reliable Ouija board from Parker Brothers. It's a very old board I've had for a while. We have another producer's board that's really cool. It has a big all-seeing eye on it. It's really nice. And then I got Bob's board. We got another one that's pan-painted. It looks really cool. So we got a few boards in here tonight just for the spirit of it all. And, of course, we're ogling the huge Ouijazilla that is all over the internet right now. And so we're very, very proud to have you on the show, Rick, because that certainly is something, a marvel to behold, I swear. It's really amazing.
Thank you.
We're going to go to the phones right now at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Let's go down to Jeff in Michigan. Hi, Jeff. You're on with Karen Dahlman and Rick Schreck. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, and thanks for taking my call. Look, I used to hold Ouija board sessions, kind of like a party thing, back in the 90s. And I used to get some rough groups in, like bikers and their girlfriends and stuff like that. And, I was laboring at the job. But I used to use, like, a 1950s rectangular diner table, and I used to just draw the letters out on the table and we used to use a shot glass and use that like that, and the table would start to lift, it'd get up in the air, and then the shot glass would raise off the table simultaneously, and we tried doing that with a board, too, on the table, and we'd get the table to raise up off the floor, and then we'd get the board to raise up off the table at the same time, and then the shot glass, but we didn't use a plastic planchette. We used a whiskey, a little whiskey
shot glass
one. Yeah. But that would raise up in the air, and then the board would spin around. Well, that really freaked out people, even these biker types, man. That always interested me, and it got me interested in science and stuff like that after that. But it made me a pariah in here. So I wouldn't invite, you have to be careful where you do it, because, you're gonna,
well, a lot of people, though, I understand, Jeff, because a lot of people, they freak out. The minute you say, oh, I got a Ouija board, and freak out. But they don't look at the art of it. I think that artistically speaking, they're really cool to look at. And even though you may not use them, they're certainly interesting to display. They're certainly interesting to look at. And as an oracle themselves, they're just something that is used to, I guess, bring theater to your seance or bring theater to your automatic writing. I think it's a great tool. It's amazing to actually look at. And, you've heard all these stories before, Rick and Karen. And just curious, while we still have some time, is there any, weird stories you wish to share? First, Rick, do you have a weird story you want to share us about your experience with a Ouija board?
Not a whole heck of a lot. Every time I've ever used the Ouija board, I was always convinced the other person was moving it.
Okay. So do you still have that feeling, or do you think that maybe something spiritual is moving through you when you use it?
I've tried, like, that list on my board, right, all those do not things, I kind of use that as a to-do list because I try to, like, do all the negative stuff, like graveyard stuff and all that, to make things happen. And I wasn't ever lucky enough to have any of those spooky experiences. Like, right. I always looked for it, so on horror movies.
Right.
You know? And I've seen people use it. I've used the board with Karen. And I've used the board with my wife and my kids. And they all, you know, they all feel something. I've never had, like, a real super cool experience to speak of.
Yeah, and then you have to lug that other big one around. My God, man, that's a really bad experience. So, Karen, have you had any weird experiences with the board that you can relate?
Oh, I've had so many over the years. I would say when I was younger, it was probably more weird and spooky because I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I got started when I was 8. And then, you know, as I kind of grew up with the board and got better at using it, it wasn't so spooky. It was just mostly amazing and remarkable. I do a lot of open message circles or readings for people or live shows where people get a call in, and I don't know these people at all. And the messages that come through are so exact, so precise, and that to me is really amazing. But I do remember one story in particular that happened when I was in Mexico just visiting. And in a nutshell, I wasn't planning on doing the board, but I actually saw an apparition. And when the apparition came, it kind of freaked me out. And so my friend had brought a board with her, and we sat down and used it and spoke to her. And we found out that she had committed suicide and was looking for her daughter who was killed. And we ended up reuniting her and her daughter together. I write about that in one of my books, but the story didn't stop there. She came to visit me again when I went back to California after I was in Mexico, and she had more to say to me. We helped her move on and be able to move into the afterlife where she was kind of like not wanting to go there. But I've had a lot of just crazy, interesting experiences that just blow my mind. There's not a session I sit down at that I'm not just totally amazed and astonished.
Yeah, I've had a few. They're really amazing and astonishing. And so far, no one has gotten hurt, but certainly gotten a little spooked. Karen A. Dahlman with us, director of the Talking Board Historical Society, vice president Rick Olormortis Schreck is with us, the owner-operator of House of 1,000 Tattoos in Middlesex, New Jersey. He's also the inventor and the mastermind behind the Ouijazilla. Take a look at it online. You'll find it very interesting. Coming up, more of your phone calls. And in the next hour, we're going to be doing a little boarding ourselves. And that's not with a surfboard. We're going to be boarding here in the studio. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Back with more Ground Zero. Don't go away.
FM News 101 KXL.
Is with us tonight, Talking Board Historical Society, and of course, the inventor of Ouijazilla, Rick Schreck, with us tonight, taking your calls at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Let's go to Mary in Texas. Hi, Mary, you're on Ground Zero with Karen and Rick. Go ahead.
How are you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
My main question is that I've never experienced the Ouija board, but I am I'm interested in more in the crystals and the bracelets. I had ordered me some a couple of weeks ago, and I was waiting for my husband to come home to tell me how to use them because I'm legally blind.
Mm-hmm.
But I got some the black kyanite, a health bracelet, and I think a black tourmaline necklace and a bracelet. And I emailed them, and they told me that I'm probably going to need a selenite because I was explaining to them what's going on in my life, and they told me that I could be an empath. But I was wondering if, will they keep the negative energy away from me, or will it help me prosper into my own energy.
Karen, what do you think about these crystals that she's talking about? You know anything about crystal energy?
I do. And I love all kinds of gems and crystals and stones. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about everything has energy or energetic properties. I mean, everything is moving molecules. And so there's definitely a sentience or energy about them. And it's really, really your beliefs that you put into them. So you pick stones that are really more for protection and grounding, it sounds like. And a selenite stone, which I love, is really for more the higher octaves and realms and dreams and channeling. So it's really a nice balance to bring in the selenite with the darker, the tourmaline, and the darker crystal. So it's a nice balance, and they're probably right, to help you kind of get that yin-yang balance going on. But, those are fabulous stones. Enjoy them, and just absorb all you can about working with them and learning about them, because there really is not just one way of using them, and there's not just one belief behind them. So I always encourage people, if you ever pick up the stones or the crystals, to read many different books on it, and then see what works right and fits right for you. And then soon enough, you'll be developing your own crystal magic.
That's great. That's great advice. Karen Dahlman and Rick Schreck, thank you so much for being on the program tonight and giving us the word on Ouijazilla. We'll probably have you on again, Karen, to talk more about this. And Rick, once again, what a great idea, an amazing idea. So glad for your success.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Karen, we'll be seeing you again soon, I'm sure. Thank you for being on the program again.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care. Hey, definitely. Same thing. Same to you. All right, we'll be back with more Ground Zero. 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Coming up, we're going to be surfing the seas of spirituality. We have a number of boards in here. We're going to try them out on the air and taking your phone calls as well at 877-733-1011. More Ground Zero coming up. Don't go away. Hey guys, it's Clyde. I want to talk to you about something we tend to ignore or may want to consider. Now is a great time to focus attention on the importance of preparing our families, homes, businesses, and communities for disasters that threaten our lives, property, and homeland. Preparedness is a shared responsibility. It is critical to maintain readiness. Each step we take to become better prepared makes a real difference in how we will persevere when faced with the unexpected. Well, there are two things you can count on when you buy from My Patriot Supply: getting high-quality food for the best value and freedom. The emergency food you'll depend on is made from the freshest ingredients. Meals are freeze-dried and sealed airtight with an oxygen absorber enclosed in a resealable zipper pack for a long-term storage that lasts up to 25 years. That's amazing. To order, go to preparewithgroundzero.com. That's preparewithgroundzero.com. Or call and speak to a preparedness advisor at 888-440-8150. That's 888-440-8150. Be sure to mention Prepare with Ground Zero. 888-440-8150.
An illusion. This is the future we are in right now, where our phones are the first things that we touch when we wake up, the last thing we touch before falling asleep. Brady. Seductive screens we so love and endlessly gaze upon. Much like you're doing right now. Fall off. Talking through where our troubled reflection is only revealed as the screen goes dark. Welcome to the darkness. I hope you find it enlightening.
Give up.
Clyde Lewis, and this is Ground Zero. The numbers to call tonight, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. It's difficult. It's a hard sell to get people to think outside the box with regard to Ouija boards. They became completely vilified after the movie The Exorcist came out in 1973. Almost overnight, after that movie was shown in theaters, the Ouija board became a tool of the devil. And for that reason, it doesn't help when people continue to push the ideas that the board is a witch board or a switchboard to Satan, or that it will open the gates of hell. There are plenty of films out there that depict the Ouija board in some evil way. In fact, a lot of it has to do with ripping bodies apart and possessing co-eds, and of course, a ghost hunting tool that works well. You have to somehow get over the fact that for some unfounded reason, the Ouija board has been denounced by religious groups as Satan's preferred method of communication, when Satan has better things to do than hang out on a board game. In 2001, in Alamogordo, New Mexico, Ouija boards were being burned on bonfires along with copies of Harry Potter and Disney's Snow White. Christian groups still remain wary of the board, citing scriptures denouncing communication with spirits through mediums. If you do a search for Catholic.com, Catholic.com calls the Ouija board far from harmless, and the 700 Club, Pat Robertson, declared that demons can reach us through the Ouija board. So even within the paranormal community, if you bring a Ouija board into a room, it gets a little dodgy there, too. A lot of people get a little weirded out by it. It doesn't make any sense to me, because every paranormal investigator has used tools to pick up disturbances or electromagnetic changes in a room. And they've used mediums that sense some things, and they say what they are feeling, which, again, is free thought and automatic thinking, and it all flows through the medium. But somehow, if it flows through a medium into their hands onto a planchette, it becomes evil for some reason. I mean, you can't have it both ways. The board literally it either brings theater into the mix, just like tarot cards and throwing runes and crystal balls, and you can actually have contact with a dead or a demon, and you don't have to touch a board to get in contact with a demon or something. I mean, if you use a dowsing rod, it's the same principle. You ever use dowsing rods? I see those at ghost hunts all the time, people using dowsing rods, and they cross, and immediately, that means the ghosts are there. Or pendulums. You ever seen those? Yes, swing one way. No, swing the other way. Go in circles. So as we're thinking about Halloween being a spiritual time and the fact that we've got plenty of Ouija boards in the rooms with us right now, I want to take a few calls, get some experiences out there, and then with the help of my assistants, who we'll announce in just a bit, we're going to be riding the waves with the spirit boards tonight on Ground Zero. We're going to go to Dave, first of all. Dave in New York, you're on Ground Zero. Go ahead.
Wow, last night, the Loch Ness Monster, tonight, Ouija-Zilla. It's a great break from the political nonsense on television. Well, I have a bad experience. Regrettably, I smashed a Ouija board. It was a Parker Brothers, you know, your basic one from the toy store.
Mm-hmm.
I broke it in half and threw it off a bridge into a river. This was sometime in the 1970s. I'd just gotten my driver's license. We had one of those little FM converters underneath the dashboard to hear all the preachers on the radio. And I remember a preacher talking about how if I used the Ouija board, I was going to get demon-possessed. And I was incorrigible back then and got convinced to throw the board into the river. And I regret it today.
Why do you regret it? You want to try one out again? Is that what you want to do?
Maybe. I don't know. When I was a kid, it was kind of strange, I grew up in an evangelical family, and I was surprised in retrospect that we had one of these boards in the house. I was into antique cars as a kid. I used to go with my uncle to car shows and all kinds of things, and I remember asking the board questions about particular cars, and I remember the answer was a Franklin automobile at one point, which was kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the heck happened, but my family got more and more away from, how shall we say, the paranormal, and more into more rigid ideas, I think.
Right. Well, there's nothing wrong with, having your religion and then also being able to expand your horizons a little bit. But like I say, I mean, this isn't for everybody. The board isn't for everybody. I'm not saying that, hey, you should use a board whether you like it or not. No, if you have a bad feeling about something, please do not use it. If it makes your life hell, don't do it. Okay. But, there are some people that, I mean, You know, they know how to use a board. They don't go around using it like some teenager on a, you know, a prom date. They certainly know that you ask the right kind of questions. It gives you a lot of interesting answers. I mean, for me, when I use it not to, you know, contact my family or contact somebody who's passed. I use it basically to get information about the world in general. And it's far more interesting to do that than it is to go after some personal things, because no one wants to hear personal stuff. They want to hear if this board's going to give them information about what's happening in the future.
Question I've got, is it a communication with spirits, or is it perhaps your own subconscious that comes out through that planchette?
Well, that's what the ideomotor responses are, and that's what a lot of scientists are saying, that, you know, it is your response to the planchette with your hand, but something is going through you. That's why it's always nice to have two people on the board at the same time, because something is going through the body into the planchette that moves it the way it does. So it's an ideomotor response. Your muscles are involuntarily moving around the board, and they land on certain letters, and they may mean something. And that's the mystery of it, is why is it that the body reacts as it does to create these things, and what is coming out? Because we've had sessions before. In fact, Tracy Twyman was the last Ouija board session we've had, except for Bob's board. And she had a lot of things that she did with her board. She made her own board, and that board was giving her information about the future, that a lot of it came true, actually. A lot of people have called many times to say what Tracy did with the Ouija board was very interesting. And that was probably the first time in a long time that I allowed a Ouija board session to happen. And, in fact, tonight we've been talking about how, you know, doing this session is in memory of Tracy, who passed away this year. And we were also open to the idea, if she wanted to come onto the board and talk to us, that'd be amazing as well. So,
well, I remember as a kid, we used to record the church services and get together at the house, and they'd connect all the tape recorders together to copy the tapes for the shut-ins. And I remember all kinds of interesting conversations with the adults. I was a really young kid, and at that point, they talked about flying saucers and the paranormal and all kinds of things. And it seemed like as I got older, everybody got away from that. They no longer talked about that. And I don't know why they got away from it. A lot of the people I knew became ordained ministers, and I guess you're not allowed to talk to them.
Well, I mean, a lot of people think that the paranormal is something of the devil. It's really not. It's there to educate you, and you learn more from it. So I think a lot of people, you know, they go through their phases, and they get older, and they think, oh, I have no time for it. But then they rediscover it again, and when they do, they're very surprised as to what they learn, especially when you get older and you realize that, you know, you're cramming for your finals before that final day. So you want to find out everything you need to find out. Dave, thank you for the call. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
You take care. Have a great night. Let's go to, well, Ryan Gable's calling in from New York. Hi, Ryan. You're on Ground Zero.
Hey, Clyde. Good show tonight.
Thank you.
A good friend of mine, she actually sent me the first Ouija board I ever had.
Oh, cool.
It has not, since she sent it to me, burst into flames, so that's good.
That's good, yes.
Nothing bad's happened. I actually used it to channel what I believe was my pet. I had a pet Peking duck when I lived in Florida, and I believe that I communicated with it. But what you guys were just talking about a second ago kind of reminded me of Bandersnatch, where the one character says, it's the spirit out there that works through you. And that maybe in some way is what you guys were meaning about the Ouija board from a popular context, a popular culture standpoint.
Well, I've always heard the old saying where whatever is coming at you sometimes comes from within you. And that goes for anything dealing in the spirit world. If you're dealing with the board, much of what is happening, sure, there are spirits around us all the time, but if you open yourself up and your muscle responses are being guided somehow, then there is this magic going on where you are a conduit to the other side. And I think that is what needs to be stressed here, is that while, yes, you're moving the planchette, and yes, you're probably not as cognizant of what you're doing, there's something in the room or something with you that is guiding you. Now, what that is anybody's guess, but people can do it without a Ouija board. And when it's done without a Ouija board, people feel more comfortable about it. But for some reason, the board itself has gotten a bad rap, when in reality, it's all in you. It's all what you do.
Certainly. And if you look at a board, most boards are made of wood, ink, plastic. And I thought it was interesting, because if you look at a book, for example, a book is made out of similar materials. It's made out of paper. It's made out of ink. And there's a practice called bibliomancy, where people open up the Bible and they see certain verses or certain words, and they take that to have some kind of personal meaning in their personal life. It's a form of divination. It doesn't mean that the Bible's bad. And it
I've done bibliomancy before. I think a lot of Christians have done bibliomancy, where they say, okay, open a book, and what's the scripture? And you point it's like pointing your finger at the globe. and you see the scripture, you read it, and it, you take in meaning from it. Why was that scripture given to me? That's bibliomancy. That's where you're actually using the Bible for a guidance by opening it and randomly selecting a scripture that you have no idea that you've selected, and you put meaning to it. That's synchromysticism, what we talked about earlier on the program, and a lot of people do bibliomancy because they think it's okay to do it, but it's no different than working a Ouija board, in my opinion.
Right. It's kind of like spinning a globe and putting your finger on a part of the globe and saying, this is where I'm going to end up living someday.
Right.
And it's some one of those things where you watch a lot of movies and you see the Ouija board and there's always like a group of girls and they say, okay, who am I going to marry? And then the planchette starts moving. It's funny that when I was going to high school, when I was going to middle school, I went to a Christian school. And I always remembered hearing about how Ouija boards were really dangerous and these kinds of things were scary and we should stay away from them. But every year during Halloween, during Samhain, Samhain, during this time of the year, we would do apple bobbing.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because the common thing people ask on a Ouija board is, who am I going to marry? And apple bobbing is actually based on predicting who you will marry, who
exactly.
will be next to be married.
Exactly.
Like throwing a bouquet of flowers at a wedding.
Mm-hmm. And it was done with apples. There was also some connotation of the Adam and Eve forbidden fruit thing as well, the choice between one person having an apple and another person having the apple and whether or not you should pair up with them in a kissing room or something of that. Yeah.
They'd
go ahead.
They'd hang the apple from a string on a tree, so it's very much like the Garden of Eden.
Exactly. It's all got basics. Everything is based in the Bible. Everything is, I mean, I was talking earlier about how did the prophet speak with numbers, sigils, and letters, and those letters are part of the light situation. And so if we put those numbers, those letters, those symbols and sigils on a board, and we move a planchette around, it's no different than what the prophets did of old. So, Ryan, thank you so much for calling. It's the same thing. It really is. And it gets a bad rap just because of a movie. Anyway, 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. More to come. Keep it here on Ground Zero.
FM News 101 KXL.
You're listening to Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis on FM News 101.
Let's go to Charles calling in from Maine tonight. Charles, you're on Ground Zero. What's up?
Yeah, hey, Clyde. I was focusing on the part where you're talking about portals, like that sort of thing, and then you had other people mentioning subconscious and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It reminded me of a story that happened is that I had a sister. She was like 3 years older than I was.
Yes.
And she had a bigger room than I had, like a bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got older and moved out, you know, was doing her own thing, I eventually got a room. So oddly enough, there was a lot of things that my sister said when she lived in that room. And I always assumed that, like, yeah, she must have been, like, you know, out partying or something. You know, those stories don't make any sense. And I would have all these wild dreams, and I would, like, tell my mom about them. And, you know, I think it was basically my subconsciousness as I grew up. But I was still a kid at the point, and I had this dream one night, is that I'm sleeping. And I was dreaming, and there was, and like a figure that came up. I was no longer in my room. I was dreaming. I was in another room, and I was on a bed, and there was a window next to it, and it was like a figure that floated up. I believe it had wings. I didn't see the wings, and it like knocked on the window, or it wanted to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So I opened the window, like a double glass window thing, and the being came inside. And, you know, it was very polite, and it asked if it could sit on the bed or whatever and talk to me. And I said, yeah, go ahead. And then I sat on the bed, and if you can imagine, there's a dresser in front of the bed. And I remember the dresser for some reason. It has nothing to do with the story. But this angel or spirit or whatever it were laid down the book. It had a book with it, and it explained to me, this is the book of you. And I was like, okay, well, all right. Well, it was asking me, like, you want to read it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So it showed me the book and everything else, and it was a really big book. And I figured, you know, kind of weird. I want to see if I can, like, extrapolate anything important from this. So I end up waking up, and I remember specifically from the dream, it said there was a chapter or a page or whatever. It had something to do with, like, something that you can do that apparently was interesting to me. And I remember reading the book, and it was Parpin's Trot.
Mm-hmm.
It was two words, Parpin's Trot. And I said, huh, that's kind of weird, because I think, like, your subconscious, like I used to watch like old Batman movies where they say, you know, or comics or whatever, you know, your subconscious, as far as I know, your subconscious can't read. So I was thinking, well, that's kind of weird. It must have been like a word that was on the radio or something. And I found out that, you know, there was no radio on and everything else. And I said, well, huh, I wonder how the word Parpin's Trot got into my head, my subconscious, while I was sleeping. So I go to the local library. It was in New Hampshire. It was the local library. It's a very small town. And I talk to the librarians there, and they have these really old books that is like from other parts of the world where different phrases and words come from.
Mm-hmm.
And it only took me like maybe 45 minutes or an hour, whatever it were. And you can't check these books out of the library. And one of these days, I want to go back there because I found the term Parpin's Trot, and it was a real. It had like a history behind the book. It was like, I believe it was like German mixed with something. Like it had like an ancestor.
What is it? What does it mean? What does it mean?
It means the ability to walk through a stone wall.
Apparently. Wow. That's amazing. And that was in your subconscious mind, right?
Yeah. I never heard the term before, and I never heard the term, like, since that day. And it was just weird because, you know, I always thought that I had, like, a vivid imagination, this blah, blah, blah.
Maybe you have a very good subconscious mind, and that would mean that maybe you're a prime candidate for mediumship. That always happens, too, when you're doing that sort of thing. You learn just who you are inside when you're doing these types of things. Charles, I'm out of time, but I thank you. So I decided that coming up, before we do anything with the board, I'm going to do a little bibliomancy on the show. So we've got this random Bible verse thing that I'm going to do, and then that's how we're going to start it off. Okay? Sounds like a plan? Because I know that Ryan brought up bibliomancy, and I think a lot of people don't know that people do that. They actually find a scripture at random, and they figure this is how you're going to start the night. So it would be a good way to open the show. Open up the Ouija board session. So that's coming up on Ground Zero. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned. 877-733-1011. We'll be back.
Following a disaster, your home emergency kit will be invaluable. Building a kit doesn't take long, and you'll be glad you did when disaster strikes. Here's a list of items to include: a first aid kit, battery-powered or hand crank radio, flashlight, extra batteries, an emergency whistle, cell phone with charger, cash and small bills, a local map with your family meeting place identified, food and water to last 2 weeks, garbage bags, dust masks, and seasonal clothing and footwear. Add prescription medications or any other important items unique to your family's needs. Once you've created your kit, check food expiry dates once a year and update seasonal clothing for growing children. If you have pets, make sure you have everything your furry friends need in an easy-to-carry grab-and-go bag. To learn more about preparing an emergency kit, visit mil.wa.gov/preparedness and get 2 weeks ready.
Be sure to get your low-cost 2-week supply of food with a miraculous 25-year shelf life by going to preparewithgroundzero.com.
More with Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero on FM News 101.
An enemy, or helper, friend, or to
the report says, it leads to a kind of fatalism. They said the practice of calling the dead kept the whole family's lives being dominated by seances and Ouija board forecasts. In some cases, the result had been psychiatric disorders.